Broadcasting from deep within the second realm, you are listening to agoristradio.com.
Hello, this is Hero White of the Cypherpunk Show. Agoristradio.com is sponsored by MetroPie.net, SSH proxy and VPN services. Privacy is your right, only if you defend it. Please support our sponsors and tell others about them.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible.
Welcome to another edition of Cypherpunk. This is Hero White, and today we have another special guest. Hero White will be joining us. Hero, are you there? Yes, I am. We're going to be talking about certificate authorities. The topic of today is the certificate authority is dead. Long live the certificate authority. Two articles have come out recently, one by Moxie Marlinspike, which is from the thoughtcrime.org website, and is somehow tied in with the Anarchist Yacht Club and Whisper Systems, who has been bringing us these encrypted voice over IP and encrypted text and root disk encryption system for the Android operating system. He wrote an interesting article called SSL and the Future of Authenticity, and I'm going to cover that second. The first one is an article by Declan McCullough out of the CNET News website called Why Browsers Differ on Website Safety. And it sounds an elementary topic, but many issues are brought up in here that are very important. So I'm going to read over both of these, and then we're going to go over a couple of things that are happening on the scene and methods and things that we can pursue in an agorist fashion to bypass this state, corporate, centralized certificate authority system, and to, first off, come up with ways that we as cypherpunks on the technical side can at least start or at least continue and implement ways of working with these SSL systems that bypass some of these problems that we're going to bring up. And secondly, some ideas on things that we can do and users can do and we can build into the architecture of our processes on the internet, and then actually get into a state where regular users can have some of this security built in. So I'm just going to start off here with a Declan article. Why Browsers Differ on Websites Safety by Declan McCullough. For all the tens of billions of dollars a year spent on internet security, on everything from antivirus software to intrusion prevention, there's one component that's viral but remains obscure. Which websites browsers decide to trust? Each of the major browser makers has compiled a different list of who possesses the master keys to web authentication, namely, who can be trusted to issue the secure digital certificates to create encrypted channels, and each has different procedures for approval. A closed lock icon typically answers in a browser, and an HTTPS connection is displayed when a website is deemed legitimate. The flaws in this system were thrown into sharp relief by last week's revelation that a hacker traced to Iran obtained fake digital certificates for Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and other companies. Komodo, a Jersey City, New Jersey-based firm, said it revoked the 9 certificates as soon as it discovered the breach in a business partner systems. Today's system gives browser makers tremendous responsibility. Any list of so-called certificate authorities they include will be trusted by billions of web browsers around the world. Unless users take the time to change the settings, the surprise is, perhaps, that the list of who's trusted aren't the same. Quote, Microsoft appears to generally trust a much larger set of certificate authorities than Mozilla does, unquote, says Peter Eckersley, senior staff technologist at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Quote, that may be because Microsoft's criteria are easier to meet in practice or because certificate authorities prioritize getting onto Microsoft's list first, unquote. Mozilla ships Firefox with a list of about 150 trusted certificate authorities. The list included with Microsoft Windows used by Internet Explorer totals 321 as of this past week. Opera includes only 37. Apple's OS X operating system, which Safari relies on, trusts 79 certificate authorities. Google says Chrome uses the Windows or OS X lists. Google Checkout trusts 168. See CNET's spreadsheet with comparisons, and the link is on the site there. It's difficult to compare those numbers directly, though, because some certificate authorities are counted multiple times. VeriSign appears 55 times in Microsoft's list based on different types of products offered, but only once in Opera's, for instance. Microsoft explicitly trusts more government-operated certificate authorities than any other browser maker. The list includes Brazil, Hong Kong, India, Japan, Latvia, Lithuania, Serbia, Slovenia, the United States, Tunisia, Turkey, Uruguay, and Venezuela. Another complicating factor is that some browsers download updated lists of root certificate authorities as needed. Opera's default list starts out with limited number of frequently used certificates, says Yngve Patterson, a senior developer at Opera Software in Oslo, Norway. The remainder are downloaded as needed from certs.opera.com. When the user actually visits a site issued from a root, we pre-ship some roots and also some intermediaries, while others are downloaded dynamically. Just a little side note here. This article, I am just full of oh my gods. And we'll continue. What makes the list of trusted certificate authorities crucial is that each possesses the master keys to web authentication. Companies like Etisalat, a wireless carrier in the United Arab Emirates that implanted spyware on customers' BlackBerry devices, can generate certificates that can be used to impersonate any secure website on the Internet. So do more than 100 German universities. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security and random organizations like the Gemini Observatory, which operates a pair of 8.1-meter diameter telescopes in Hawaii and Chile. A fraudulent certificate would allow a network provider or a government to use what's known as a man-in-the-middle attack to impersonate the legitimate sites and grab passwords, read email messages, and monitor any other activities on those websites, even if the browsers show that the connections were securely protected with SSL encryption. And in the last few years, plenty of other techniques have emerged to trick computers into visiting fake websites even without control of the network. Microsoft says it included the Tunisian government as a trusted certificate authority after it went through the normal application process. Quote, Microsoft requires that certificate authorities applying to the program provide standardized information, says Bruce Cowper, Microsoft's group manager for trustworthy computing. Tunisia applied in 2006, he said, and its certificate was distributed in February 2007. Venezuela, mind you, the government of Venezuela, applied in September 2010, and it was approved a month later. Copper declined to provide information about how many companies, organizations, or governments have failed to pass muster, saying, quote, Microsoft does not share specific information about denied applications, but we do reject applications from certificate authorities who don't meet our criteria or fall into one of the named exclusions from the program. Microsoft's specifications, and there's a link on this article for to access it directly, say that any certificate authority that fails an audit, for an instance, will be given the boot. Wow. If a certificate authority isn't in our list, it is either because they have not asked to be included or have not been approved, says Operas Pedersen. So far, I don't think we have refused any certificate authorities that have applied. Neither Tunisia nor Venezuela have sent Opera an application to be included, he said. Neither Apple nor Komodo responded to requests for comment. While both Microsoft and Opera make their criteria public, Mozilla goes further and even makes the list of pending applications public. Those include a certificate authority operated, government operated by the government of the Valencia region of Spain, and Deutscher Sparkassen Verlag GmbH, the world's largest smart card provider. As a result of the Komodo breach, Komodo is currently trusted by all the major browsers, there's been talk among Mozilla developers of imposing what amounts to the Internet death penalty, revoking the company's certificate authority, at least until a security audit is performed from the default Firefox configuration. Lending ammunition to critics is that this is not the first time that Komodo has experienced a serious security breach. In 2008, a reseller issued an improperly acquired certificate for Mozilla.org. And Komodo's chief technology officer, Robin Alden, wrote in February 2010 that before issuing a certificate, quote, Komodo performs an automated check of domain control by sending and confirming receipt of an email to an address which is either on the domain to be validated or is explicitly mentioned in the Whois entry, end quote. That apparently wasn't done when Komodo Business Partner issued these fraudulent certificates earlier this month. Komodo declined to answer questions that CNET posed last week, including the identity of its reseller, what current audits were performed, and how much authority it delegates to partners. That's the end of the article. And if that doesn't shock you and blow your mind, whether you are up to date on the general issues of false security certificates being issued that can be issued by governments and the like, that's something else. And we're going to take a little break here and listen to another song by Daft Punk called End of the Line, remixed by Boys Noize. This is from the latest Tron movie. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. Nice little tune there. Now we're going to start up on this article by Moxie Marlinspike, and this is going to cover a lot of the comments that I would have thrown out from the peanut gallery reading that last article. And then we'll get into some analysis and ideas that are being bounced around. This was SSL and the Future of Authenticity by Moxie Marlinspike, April 11th, 2011. The background. In the early 90s, at the dawn of the World Wide Web, some engineers at Netscape developed a protocol for making secure HTTP requests. And what they came up with was called SSL. Given the relatively scarce body of knowledge concerning secure protocols at the time, as well as the intense pressure everyone at Netscape was working under, their efforts can only be seen as incredibly heroic. It's amazing that SSL has endured for as long as it has, in contrast to a number of other protocols from the same vintage. We've definitely learned a lot since then, though. But the thing about protocols and APIs is that there is very little going back. Generally speaking, all secure protocols need to provide three things: secrecy, integrity, and authenticity. If any of these break, the whole protocol breaks. SSL doesn't do any of the three very elegantly by today's standards. In many cases, just barely squeaks by. But most of the practical attacks we've seen over the past 10 years have focused on the authenticity piece. The designers of SSL chose to use certification authorities as a key component of the authenticity process, and we've been stuck with this decision even after having long since outgrown the circumstances in which it was originally imagined. Lately, however, the general perception of certification authorities seems to be shifting from the old vibe of total ripoff to a new vibe of total ripoff and also insecure. So there has been a growing amount of talk about changing the authenticity piece of SSL. I'd like to take a moment to discuss the problem, though, so that we don't accidentally make the same mistake twice. Defining the problem. At the moment, there seems to be a general consensus that the CA system is not long for this world. And there's a major step forward. And that's a major step forward. But while almost everyone seems to agree that we should develop something else, the exact problem with what we have is not entirely well defined. Let's look at what people have suggested the problem might be. One, there are too many CAs. This is perhaps the easiest conclusion to take away from the EFF's SSL Observatory project. By scanning the internet, the project determined that there are approximately 650 different organizations who are currently capable of signing certificates. That seems like a lot of organizations. But remember, when there was only one, that didn't feel any better to me. There was effectively a single vendor that could charge as much as they wanted and do whatever they wanted without any recourse. And at the time, everyone was criticizing the browsers for supporting this conspiracy by not allowing others in the club. Now that they have, they're being criticized all over again. So looking at this strictly in terms of quantity feels a little too simplistic for me. Much has been made about the fact that the Department of Homeland Security or the Chinese government have their own certificate authority in that list. But certainly, if the DHS or the Chinese government were made to be made to be the only valid CA, people might feel similarly annoyed, even though the quantity would be low. Two, there are a few bad apples. The subtle undertone in some of the discussions around CAs is that there are a handful of reputable CAs, and then a number of other sketchy ones. But as Chris Sagohoyan noted in his Certified Lies paper, even back when VeriSign was the only game in town, they ran a line of services that specialized in providing hosted CALEA compliance. Basically, the very organization who had been entrusted to facilitate intercept-free communications had a division in their company that was selling intercept services. While some companies in this industry have been less intelligent about managing their image than others, my feeling is that there aren't really any existing players here who don't have dirt on their hands. And personally, I don't currently trust any of them. 3. There's a mixed scope. Some have suggested that the problem with all this is the scoping, that the DHS shouldn't be able to sign certificates for Chinese sites or vice versa. To me, this seems like a low bar. There are plenty of people who don't trust the DHS to sign certificates for any sites, and restricting the Chinese government to Chinese sites doesn't feel like a particularly powerful win either. So I'm also skeptical that this is the essence of the problem. Trust agility. I would like to suggest that the current problems with the CA system can be reduced to a single missing property. I call this property trust agility. At the moment, if I decide that I don't trust VeriSign or Komodo or any other CA, what can I do? The very best I could do would be to remove the offending CA certificate from my CA database, but then some large percentage of secure sites I visit would break. I could take an ideological stand to never visit any of those sites again, but in reality, there isn't actually an appropriate response. And this is as true for browser vendors as it is for individuals like me. Essentially, at some point, a decision was made to anchor trust in an organization like Komodo, and now we're locked into trusting them forever. By contrast, there are two important elements to this trust agility. 1. A trust decision can be easily revised at any time. It seems reasonable to think that we'll need to anchor our trust somewhere, that we'll pick some entity or group of entities to authenticate our communication. And right now, I could identify a set of organizations that I would trust to do this effectively. But what seems insane is to think that I could identify an organization who I would not only be willing to trust right now, but forever, without any future possibility of changing my mind based on that organization's performance. If we're locked into making a single decision, now that will affect us forever. What incentive is there for the trust provider we select to act in a way that will continue to warrant our trust? 2. Individual users have the option of deciding where to anchor their trust. Some say that better scoping would fix the bad CA problem, that if VeriSign did something particularly egregious and were somehow restricted to only authenticating certain sites, site owners would then be able to switch to a different CA in a separate scope, as opposed to now where VeriSign can continue to sign certificates for your site even if you're not their customer. This, in a way, would be a limited type of trust agility. I think it's worth recognizing, though, that if it's a struggle to convince sites to deploy SSL by default to begin with, it might be a stretch to think that site operators are going to be actively making these kinds of decisions in our best interest. I also think it's important to recognize that different people might have different notions of what is trustworthy behavior and what isn't. A single site operator deciding who all their users are required to trust, particularly in this globalized world, doesn't feel quite right when it's the user's data, not the site's operators, that's at risk. By contrast, trust agility allows individual users, not site operators or anyone else, the option of deciding who they would like to trust to provide authenticity. And it allows individuals to revise those decisions at any time. Dane, D-A-N-E, DNSSEC, and SSL authenticity. There has been a growing flurry of activity around leveraging DNSSEC, if it ever comes to exist, as a replacement mechanism for SSL's authenticity piece. The basic idea is that instead of getting your site's certificate signed by a certificate authority, you just put it in your DNS record. Since DNSSEC is supposed to ensure that the DNS responses a client receives are authentic, it should prevent someone from performing a man-in-the-middle attack and substituting a forged certificate. It's essentially removing the authenticity element from SSL and using the one from DNSSEC instead. There's an almost immediately visceral appeal to leveraging DNSSEC this way. because DNS tends to be mentally associated with the word distributed. And distributed sounds pretty good in this context. One immediately imagines wiping certificate authorities who have overcharged and underprovided for so long off the face of the internet and replacing them with a distributed trust system instead. But on second glance, the cold truth is that the distributed part of DNS is the information in the records, while the trust relationships are actually extremely hierarchical. This isn't any different from the current SSL situation. Already, SSL certificates themselves are distributed throughout the internet on an individual site's web server, with the trust relationships consolidated into the CA hierarchy. So the distributedness of the two cases is exactly the same. The only difference being that adding DNSSEC to the mix would make things a little slower. But if the basic structure is the same, the next obvious question is whether there might be any improvement in how DNSSEC trust relationships work compared to the current CA system. It turns out that in the case of DNSSEC, there are three classes of people that we have to simultaneously trust. One, the registrars. Certificate authorities are sketchy, but this is a whole new world of sketchiness. Think Sketchosaurus. Registrars were never built or selected with security in mind, and most of them don't have a very good track record in this area. Should it be laughable that the current first step in deploying DNSSEC is to create an account with GoDaddy? I mean, really? Do you trust this guy forever? The TLDs, too. In the case of .com, that's VeriSign again. Same player, same game. Take a moment to look at the organizations responsible for the other generic TLDs, as well as the executives that compose these organizations. Are these the people that you would trust, choose to trust, forever? In the case of country code TLDs, this requires trusting governments of those TLDs. Does anyone visiting hip domains like .io, .cc, or .ly trust the corresponding government behind them? Do the citizens of localized domains like .cn or .ir want to trust their governments with all of their local secure traffic? Like it or not, governments tend to be more interested in intercepting their communications rather than securing. 3, the root. This is ICANN. If the recent domain name seizures are any indication of the future, it seems like we might want to think carefully about forever making the decision to entrust all of our secure communication with this organization. So unfortunately, the DNSSEC trust relationships depend on sketchy organizations and governments, just like the current CA systems. Worse, far from providing increased trust agility, DNSSEC-based systems actually provide reduced trust agility. As unrealistic as it might be, I or a browser vendor do at least have the option of removing VeriSign from the trusted CA database, even if it would break authenticity with some large percentage of sites. With DNSSEC, there is no action that I or a browser vendor could take which would change the fact that VeriSign controls the .com TLD. If we sign up to trust these people, we're expecting them to willfully behave forever without any incentives at all to keep them from misbehaving. The closer you look at this process, the more reminiscent it becomes. Sites create certificates. Those certificates are signed by some marginal third party, and then clients have to accept those signatures without ever having the option to choose or revise who we trust. Sound familiar? No trust agility, no future. So here we are on the cusp of something. At long last, we're finally approaching the critical mass necessary to replace the CA system that we've long since grown out of. But when evaluating replacement models for the CA system, the very first question we should ask is, who do I have to trust and for how long? If the answer is a prescribed set of people forever, we should probably proceed with extreme caution. I believe that if we don't develop a solution which offers trust agility, we will inevitably find ourselves back in the exact same place that we're currently trying to escape from. The DNSSEC community has been struggling to get DNSSEC deployed for a long time, for the most part in the face of ambivalence. I suspect that they see the SSL authenticity piece as a potential sense of urgency, which could finally make people care enough to push DNSSEC cart over the hill. But I think we should be careful about getting on board. I'll write more soon about alternative authenticity pieces for SSL, which do provide trust agility that I am considerably more inspired by. That's the end of the article. And in the article, many of the little things that were mentioned, there are links to. So it's suggested to take a look at. You can find this at blog.thoughtcrime.org/SSL-and-the-future-of-authenticity. Well, I think both of those articles say quite a bit about the state of where things are right now. At the end of the article, Moxie talks about decisions that must be made. And I think there's two paths that need to be addressed here. One is what I have always, the path that I have always taken in the past and many of the people that I've been involved with. And it's sort of the perspective that Moxie has. And that is this statement of we need to think about what path that we take. Now, when he says we, it's a very collective term. And it is a collective perspective because they're looking at creating or taking a particular route for the world, for all the browsers, for all the certificate authorities and how all this whole system works. Now, there's something to be said about that, and I think it's a path that should be considered, how these systems can be done in a way that is better. But an agorist approach is not necessarily going to look at what is the money system that we can replace the entire world with? How can we fix the Federal Reserve? And that is sort of what's happening on the net right now. How can we fix the Federal Reserve? How can we create fix the security, the certificate authority system? So the title of this show was Certificate Authorities Are Dead, Long Live the Certificate Authorities. And that is, this whole system has melted down, and it's been shown to be exploded recently more so than ever. I think that the ideas that Moxie had about trust agility are key here, and I'm sure he's going to address some of the possible options that can be taken, and whether anyone's going to listen to him or not, they're options that we can take right now. The first thing that I have to say about all of this in trust agility is it's all about who you trust. Just like in the currency systems, who do you trust, what currency do you want to use, and how can you agree with other people with that? The certificate authority problem, we haven't seen that same problem happen with the in the realm of SSH connections between machines and PGP communications between individuals, because we don't using those systems, it's not the whole infrastructure is not based upon trusting someone else's approval of your key. In PGP, SSH, and the other system, which is quite fantastic on all of this, the one-time off-the-record system, OTR, that it's used within a lot of chat systems, they use fingerprint verification. So instead of having a certificate that you check who signed it, you actually look at the key fingerprint. Now, all SSL certificates are based on keys, and there is a key fingerprint that is in there, but all of the authentication methods that exist out there up till now, and with a couple of recent projects that are starting to work on it, they don't care about the fingerprint. They only care about the certificate and who has signed that certificate. So in SSH, you connect to a new server and you get a fingerprint verification. That fingerprint verification gets thrown into a known host file. And then as you connect to that server, that host name, in the future, that key that SSH sees, the fingerprint key, is compared with this local database, and if it's changed, it notifies you that something could be happened there. In the SSL system, every time you hit that website, the certificate key could be changing, and you would have no idea. A man in the middle could be happening by the person who signed the certificate authority, the certificate authority who signed that certificate. So the same thing happens with OTR. It's all about the fingerprint offline or third-party verification with the whole web of trust system. Now, in Firefox, a great little system has been developed by a group of guys that we hope to have come on here that is called Cert Patrol. It's an extension that you can install into Firefox, and what it does is the same thing that I explained with the SSL certificate, this SSL key checking, is Cert Patrol, it doesn't care about certificate authorities. What it does is it records the host name that you're visiting, that you have specified, and the key that it sees with that host name. Now, the first time you visit a website running Cert Patrol, it's going to bring up a warning, and you can verify at that point whether that fingerprint matches or whether you're going to just blindly accept that as the default de facto key in for future connections. So that works great. OTR does the same thing. Some of the other systems, let's get into one that a lot of us use, S-Tunnel. S-Tunnel is a nice system for creating, doing kind of your own man in the middle on your own machine, where you can connect to a local non-encrypted connection with any client, and it will do the SSL connection for you on the back end. That system is quite nice, but the problem is that it does not support any form of certificate authority, of fingerprint checking at all. One nice thing it does do is that per connection in S-Tunnel, you can specify to trust a specific certificate authority instead of just an entire default bundle. And that system, a solution is for anybody who has an SSL server to create their own certificate authority and issue a certificate for that specific server. Or let's say that if we're using Ray servers, for example, is that you could put in a rayservers.com certificate authority to trust all of the Ray servers operated websites. I wouldn't want to use that certificate authority for something that they did not operate. And this is why I go back to the original title, a certificate of law is authorities are dead, long live the certificate authority, is that the trust level of a certificate authority needs to be moved back to the operator of their SSL website or of the SSL websites that they have. So I can trust the certificate authority of Ray servers for all Ray servers operated websites. I can do the same thing for MetroPipe or CryptoHippie or Zero Bank, any of the websites that they specifically operate. When I can specify that the certificate authority for those websites is this certificate authority, then that little system can work. The problem breaks down when you get into other applications which don't support a specific certificate authority, like Firefox. It is going to check the certificate by default for any website that you visit based upon a wildcard of all the certificate authorities inside the browser. Fail. Pigeon does the same thing. It has a CA certs bundle, and you can add your own in there. But if you want to specify, I want to check the jabber.rayservers.com SSL certificate based upon the certificate authority of the CA cert of jabber.rayservers.com, sure, that'll work. But if you try to connect to any other website that uses SSL through Pigeon, it's going to try to match that certificate up with the jabber.rayservers.com, and if you add any other certs in there, it's going to do it. It's wildcard. But one nice thing that you can do in Pigeon is you can go and you can wipe out all of your certificate authority certs, and trust no one. And then when you connect to a website, it's going to bring up a warning. And with that warning, you can check this fingerprint and you can accept it. So in a way, when you wipe out all the CA certs from the default Pigeon, it sort of works like the Cert Patrol for Firefox. And that's real nice. The other problem that you may have with all of this is with Cert Patrol and the SSL And the pigeon system of verifying these certificates is, how do you know that this certificate is correct? And you're going to have to verify that offline or out of band. You need to go talk to race servers. You need to talk to MetroPipe. You need to talk to mail. But you got to find out who these people are and verify the certificate from some type of level. Now, this is another completely different problem from just the checking that we've been talking about. This is about authenticity at a level of signing or verifying PGP fingerprints, OTR fingerprints, off or out of band, and many times offline. So there is a complete infrastructure that we have to start to go back to at the programmer's level. One example I'll give for that is that the Ruby Net HTTPS library does have the ability to verify certificates, but only with a specific certificate authority. Okay, fine, if you're doing self-signed and you can line up a cert CA with a particular site, like we mentioned, that's fine. But it doesn't have the ability to do fingerprint checking. But it does have the ability, during the handshaking process, to return the certificate to the programmer. So what he can do is he can open up, identify, get the SHA-1 fingerprint from that certificate and check it against his own internal database. He can fail the connection or pass it from there. So there are things that we can do as programmers in many of our libraries to do fingerprint checking while the SSL handshake is taking place. Getting SSL, S-Tunnel, and some of these other programs to do their thing that way is going to be a much bigger project. So my focus here is more of the agorist approach. What can we do right now on our own machines with our own code instead of trying to get everyone to change theirs? Their method of doing. Now, there is a nice little thing that I've been doing on my system to help do fingerprint verification without having to pull up a text editor or pull up a printed out sheet of paper and do manual fingerprint verification. And that is by prepending the certificate SHA-1 hash as a subdomain for a website. And I will post this on the blog in the show notes. So if you can go to, let's say you want to visit the MetroPipe HTTPS website, and you want to make sure that you're accessing the website from and getting the correct certificate. And you can do this whether you're using Cert Patrol or Safari or Internet Explorer or any other browser. Is you go to HTTPS B7-73 and, you know, this whole URL. And this URL can be bookmarked so it's easy to access, and it can be sent to friends, and it can be passed around, and it can become the default domain name to actually access the MetroPipe website. And anyone can do this on any of their sites. When they click on it, then you have the SSL certificate fingerprint in the host name. When your browser brings up the certificate error, which it should, and under any case, no matter how you're doing this, you can just click in the little lock icon that's probably going to show broken, which is absolutely meaningless whether it shows broken or whether it shows correctly locked. You can click on that lock icon, and there will be a little security information window that pops up, and you can click on the certificate and view certificate, and right there will be the SHA-1 SHA-1 hash, and you can compare that with what you have up on your host name and in your bookmark. So it's right there, not in an external database, it's right there. So you can send this URL to your friends through their secure channels, PGP encrypted email and the like, and other places. And what this does is it starts to build authenticity of the certificate into the host name. Because what we're all trying to help people understand here is The host name does not matter. The certificate authority does not matter. The only thing that matters in any secure communications online period is the fingerprint and whether you trust that fingerprint or not. So if we start building this in, we can use our, we can do certificate authentication in applications which don't support, fingerprint authentication in applications that don't support this. Now, another application that this method has worked out very well with me is Pigeon. So in Pigeon, when I connect to jabber.rayservers.com, I have, let's say you go to your account settings and you say, I want to edit an existing account or add a new account. You enter in your Jabber, well, you know, what's the host name? Jabber.rayservers.com, and you enter in your username, in my case, Hero. And then you go to the details page and the connection page, and it actually gives you the ability to put in the server name that you're connecting to. So instead of leaving that blank or leaving it as jabber.rayservers.com, you put in the fingerprint that you are have already gained of the and verified through other channels of the jabber.rayservers.com SSL certificate. You put the fingerprint.jabber.rayservers.com in there. Now, until RayServers puts in a host name, you will get a server not found. So you can either add this manually to your /etc host file, or you can add these domain names yourself to your own domain name. So, for example, in my case, I created a domain name which was the subdomain of the SSL fingerprint of the certificate that is sent out by the jabber.rayservers.com website dot jabber.rayservers.com.metropipe.net. So I created my own domain name with the certificate, my own subdomain in a domain name that I have access to the people controlling the domain to add this in there. Now, some people would say, well, then, you know, MetroPipe could change the IP. I really don't care what MetroPipe does with the IP, because when I connect, if the IP is different, it really means nothing to me. The only thing that matters to me is that the host subdomain and the certificate fingerprint that I trust matches this SSL fingerprint that is thrown back to me to the server that I am connected into. So in this case, what happens when I'm using my own subdomain with the cert in there is that Pigeon pops up an error and it says, we're sorry, but this certificate, now remember, I have deleted all the certificate authorities from Pigeon from the CA certs directory. So it doesn't have anybody that it trusts by default. And in this case, it gets the connection to the jabber.rayservers.com website, the SSL, and it pulls up a warning and it says, warning, the host name, and it has that long host name with the cert fingerprint listed in there, does not compute. It gives you an error based on its own silly little checks that it normally does. And there's a button there that says View Certificate. Now, when you click on that View Certificate, it pulls up the SHA-1, the SHA-1 fingerprint. You can take that fingerprint right there on the screen. Is the host name listed by Pigeon, and now you have the fingerprint of the remote site that you're connected to shown there, and you can just verify B7, A1, D2, right through. You can see the whole thing there, and you can accept it or reject it. If it matches, you can hit accept, and at that moment, that fingerprint and that certificate for that host name is stored within the certificate database of Pigeon in the same way that Cert Patrol works. Now you have bypassed all the certificate authorities, the whole problem that we've been talking about this whole time, and you've done verification. Of course, it's up to you to verify that fingerprint at the beginning, but at least you don't have a system where it's hidden from you, where you can't check it. You are using Pigeon to actually check that certificate, and it works whether it's self-signed or whether it's signed by some strange certificate authority, Equifax, or somebody out there. So that's a nice little method for people to start doing that on their own right now. Now, if the certificate is expired, what you will get is you'll get that, you'll have to do that verification every time that you connect the pigeon, which is not really that bad because, you know, you can sit there and do the verification. It just pops up right on the screen, compare the fingerprint, hit OK, and it goes in. If the dates are valid, then it will be registered inside of Pigeon as a verified certificate for that specific host name that you have specified. And remember, if the IP changes on that host name, it doesn't matter. Because if it changes and then you get a certificate that does not match what is known inside the database, then you'll get the warning. So I think this Pigeon example and the Cert Patrol example is an excellent means of securing our connections right now with a system that has gone into meltdown a long time ago, and that people are becoming more aware of how to use these systems right now. Now, for another show, we can talk about this Monkey Sphere project, which is sort of a distributed web of trust system for SSL certificates and SSH keys, and some other methods that we can use, even DNSSEC. You know, maybe DNSSEC is not a bad problem, because what it does is it allows individuals who have a particular set of domains that they control to digitally sign a whole list of information on SSL certificates, IP addresses, and the like. That's not so bad. DNSSEC falls apart when you publish that, and then that becomes the defining record. Maybe we need to look at using DNSSEC and all the tools that are out there ourselves, but then having a distributed means of getting DNSSEC information from the people that we know that controls that information. So maybe I'll use DNSSEC, but I will only get DNSSEC information from the RayServers.com people for the websites that they control. And the same for MailVault and MetroPipe and CryptoHippie and ZeroBank, this whole realm of people that we don't want to have a certificate or trust authority hierarchical structure. So then we're getting back to this whole PGP web of trust type of a system. And the Monkey Sphere guys have a very interesting system for that. So we're working on getting them on the show, and we're working on having and plan on having many shows that cover this, because now with Git and RSS and all of these types of systems out there, we can start coming up with a more automated PGP web of trust type system for individuals and companies and operations with websites to start distributing their keys and be able to update their certificate, because a website could be compromised and that key could be compromised. And we want to be able to use, let's say, PGP signature of the RayServers.com administrators for them to be able to issue new certificates on a weekly basis if they want to, without us having to go through the whole web of trust process. If we can trust their master key, then we can trust their updates. And that's basically how the DNSSEC could work in a distributed manner. So that's the end of the show today. Thank you very much for listening. And we hope that many of you that are listening will contact us and keep working on these systems and help build these infrastructures that we can use ourselves. And hopefully we can start to implement these things inside of systems that can cascade into a much larger automated and distributed system of agile trust, where the user and the individual is centric to themselves, and it goes from there. Thanks for listening to Cypherpunked.
Dodge this.
Hello, this is Hero White of the Cypherpunk Show. AgoristRadio.com is sponsored by MetroPipe.net, SSH proxy and VPN services. Privacy is your right, only if you defend it. Please support our sponsors and tell others about them.
Broadcasting from deep within the Second Realm, you are listening to AgoristRadio.com.